Our next panelist is Thomas Rentz, Esquire, a law graduate from Case Western University, who has been counsel for many federal lawsuits challenging COVID-19. It's great to see you back in Pennsylvania, Thomas. Thank you for fighting the good fight. You're also a champion for our country. So you fought many lawsuits challenging the COVID-19 lockdown, mask mandates, thank you, vaccine requirements, thank you. He's also the founder of the nonprofit organization For God, Family, and Country. I like the sound of that. Attorney Rentz has testified of his findings before the U.S. Senate as well as here last year. Sir, over to you.
Well, thank you very, very much, Senator. Last year's was very impactful. We got great feedback from around the country, and I know people were very grateful for your courage. I want to start out, and I want to throw in a couple things that I think are critical related to Dr. McCullough's testimony. And of course, the beautiful thing about testifying after Dr. McCullough is, well, I don't have a whole lot I got to add. And good luck arguing with what he said. Let me begin with this. I want to distinguish first the difference in what I bring and what Dr. McCullough brings. This is law versus science. Law is you walk into a murder scene, you see someone running out the door, you see blood on their hand and blood on a gun that's laying on the floor, and a dead guy. Okay, you probably killed that guy, right? Science is when I hand Dr. McCullough that gun and I say, can you analyze this blood to make sure that it's the right blood on the gun and on his hand? Can you analyze this crime scene here and there? Now, we can make a lot of great conclusions based on the law, and we're required to, right? Because when we talk to Dr. McCullough, when we talk to Steve Kirsch, who'll be testifying, you know, these guys on their dumbest days are smarter than most of us will be on our best. They're brilliant. So what I have to do is I have to take what they do and make it English, make it something that a jurist, a judge, or God help us, a lawyer can understand. So I'm going to present to you facts. And I'm going to present to you stuff that I believe to be evidence, and I'm going to let you draw the conclusions that you think are apt on it, because I do believe that the American public has the ability to draw conclusions based on facts that are solid, firm, and real evidence, not biased nonsense that we've been given or propaganda that we're typically gotten. So first of all, I can give you this. Dr. McCullough indicated that the different lots, there may be manufacturing discrepancies. Well, I am, and was actually, as I came up here, just looking up, I have the contracts between the DOD and Pfizer and Moderna. Wonderful lady got them off of FOIA. And those contracts seem to indicate, in my opinion, that different lots were intentionally made differently, that they intentionally made these differently. Maybe it was... To me, what it looks like is this was the largest experiment on human population in history. I don't know how else to say it. You know, you rush something out the door. The normal drug development cycle for something, 5 to 10 years easy. For a brand new category of drugs, which mRNA vaccines are, well, 5 to 10 years wouldn't even be a start. So they rush us out the door. It looks bad. I can provide later more information on those contracts if you're interested. They provide a wealth of information that tie in the DOD's involvement in this in a lot of ways. And I support our soldiers, obviously. Thank you for your service. But understand that the DOD's involvement is on a high level. It's in the bureaucratic area. It's not our heroes. We are also, in regards to the creation of that virus, you may or may not be aware, we have a lawsuit against EcoHealth Alliance in New York State for quite a hefty sum of change for the creation of this virus. EcoHealth Alliance is the one that facilitated this. Ralph Barrick, as Peter noted, did a lot of work, at least we're alleging that. And this was funded by Anthony Fauci and our U.S. government. They did create this in the lab in Wuhan, China. We do know that it was created there. We have firsthand witness testimony from Dr. Andrew Huff, who has a PhD in epidemiology, a master's in science, security science. He's a vet. He went through hell to get this information out. We have documents on documents on documents. We presented hundreds and hundreds of citations and a report that we sent to a number of congresspeople prior to the 2022 election on this. And I'm thrilled to death to see this moving forward. But let me assure you that I absolutely believe that we will be able to prove in a court of law that this was absolutely created in a lab. And the creation of this disease was done in and with knowledge of our federal government. Okay, one last kind of cleanup thing. I'm touching everything related to this. I appreciate your bill on the WHO. That's a nightmare. We're touching that. But one of the things that was asked was about the people dying in hospitals with COVID. And Dr. McCullough, God bless him, well, he's got a brighter view of it than I do. And let me explain part of the reason why. We just have, and I'm representing a whistleblower who has audio recording. She's a Stanford-educated pharmacist, daughter of veterans, mother of five, wonderful lady, credible PhD in pharmacy, so doctor of pharmacy. She has audio recordings that I recently publicized of a conversation between her and a nurse, the nurse talking about how they're killing people in the hospital, how their floor was doing the things that no other floor would do because, well, no one on other floors wanted to carry out the murder, essentially. They knew what was happening in a lot of cases. Dr. McCullough just put out a paper where he discussed the use of ventilators. Ventilators, the concept for ventilators came from China. They said, well, if you put a ventilator on someone's face, they can't cough on you, so we'll keep the healthcare workers safe, right? Even though that we knew that, you know, 75% or so of the people in New York City put on ventilators were dying, we kept doing it because we're going to protect the healthcare workers. That was the theory. Now, no one talked about that when the patients were going in there. No one told the patients, hey, you're being protected, or you're going to be put on this vent. It's probably going to kill you, but it may protect the healthcare workers. No one told the families that. And by the way, we actually had whistleblower testimony from a yet-to-be-unmasked whistleblower, and probably won't be, who worked for CMS. I've got data from CMS that showed in a number of Texas hospitals as high as 90% of patients put on the vent died. 90%. Now, they wouldn't let you try ivermectin, but they were more than willing to put you on the vent where you had a 90% fatality rate. You tell me that they didn't notice. You're telling me that the doctors on those floors, I mean, listen, you know, I can't say all doctors are created equal. McCullough is ahead above most, but you got through med school. I would think you would probably be smart enough to notice when 9 out of 10 of your patients, when they're put on the vent, die. At least maybe you should ask the question, is there a better way? Why not let someone try ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine if you have a 9 out of 10 chance of dying anyways? The reason that that's dear to my heart is because the people called me and I fought with hospital after hospital after hospital to try and save their lives. And as I testified last year here, we essentially legislated these deaths into being by incentivizing the use of remdesivir in poor protocols, incentivizing the use of vents, and incentivizing, again, not people recovering from COVID, but people dying from COVID. You got a cash bonus when someone died from COVID. So it was an incentive to kill people, and it worked incredibly well. I'm happy to revisit that, but again, my testimony from last year covered that. I want to talk about something a little bit different this year related to one of your bills, because I think it's crucial. And I'm going to do something that I don't think anybody's going to expect. I'm going to start out by thanking you for being a unity man. You're bringing people together, and you didn't even know it, Senator. There's a lot of talk about divisiveness, but your bills should be the most supported bills on the planet, and let me explain why. To start out with, I'm going to, you know, there's so much controversy, Roe v. Wade being overturned, and so much this, that, and other. One of the cases related to Roe v. Wade that was critical, and I can do my lawyer thing here for a minute, was Planned Parenthood v. Casey, which was also in part overturned with the decision. That said, a partial overturn does not overturn everything. And one of the most substantial and important things that still stands through another case, Cruzan v. Missouri Director of Health, or Department of Health, is the concept of bodily integrity and individual liberty. In Casey, which was partially overturned, but I think this is still valid, and I would challenge any court to tell me it's not. They say Roe, however, may be seen not only as exemplar of Griswold liberty as a rule of personal autonomy and bodily integrity with doctrinal affinity to cases recognizing limits on governmental power to mandate medical treatment or to bar its rejection. If so, our cases since Roe accord with Roe's view that the state's interest in the protection of life falls short in justifying any plenary override of individual liberty cases. They cite Cruzan v. Missouri of, Department of Health, which is still good law. Let me explain that in non-lawyer terms. My body, my choice is more important than grandma might catch a cold from you, so you got to vaccinate, you got to mask, you got to lock down. According to the Constitution, everything they did was wrong, and I believe that's still good case law. I bring that up because one of the things that you've done in bringing forth your unity legislation, which I'm affectionately referring to the work that you're doing, is you are advocating for my body, my choice. So I'm sure that that you'll have a number of the Democrats in this body who support my body, my choice, that will be very happy to support your legislation allowing people to maintain control of their personal health decisions. The people who have advocated for abortion, well, in abortion, and I'm a pro-life guy, so with abortion, you have the death of another, a guaranteed death of another. With COVID, you had an instance where people were, you had less than 1% case fatality rate across the majority of the population, yet you were supposed to take risks with your own life by getting a vaccine. You were supposed to do all of these things. So these things are extremely distinct. They have nothing to do with each other. And I don't think that anyone with any intellectual honesty whatsoever can say my body, my choice and be pro-COVID vaccine or pro-COVID lockdown or pro-COVID anything else, but especially the vaccines. So I think that's a critical thing, and I want to thank you for bringing the Democrats and Republicans together on that issue. I'm sure you'll see lots of Democratic support. Now, I want to thank you for the next group of people that you're bringing into the fold. Your bill, one of them that's near and dear to my heart, is very much an environmentalist bill. We outlawed DDT. When DDT was outlawed, part of the scientific analysis was, well, you know, you use that DDT, it gets into the bugs, and then the bugs get ate by something else. It enters the food supply, and it goes up and down the food supply, and it poisons the whole environment, so we've got to outlaw DDT. Food chain, right? Yep. Okay. Well, guess what? I have right here, and I actually... I took the time to put some posts in front of me just so I could reference them. I have a Global Grand Challenges. This was a presentation that was put on by Professor Hiroyuki Matsukoa, a renowned professor who has received a lot of grant money. And I'm going into informed consent. My body, my choice, and the fact that we're moving it farther from that. And your mRNA bill in food is a critical thing. But I want to alert you to the fact that it's not just food. The title of this presentation by the good Professor H is Production of a Transgenic Mosquito as a Flying Syringe to Deliver Protective Vaccine via Saliva. The Gates Foundation's been funding all sorts of genetic engineering of mosquitoes, and there's a lot of talk about using mosquitoes and mosquito bite to help vaccinate certain populations. I don't have proof that that's viable yet, but I know they're working on it, okay? So I'm not suggesting that the mosquitoes that Bill Gates is working with to engineer down in Florida are injecting anyone with anything. What I am suggesting is that I have absolutely indisputable evidence that they are working to make sure that they can inject you with something, okay? And distinguish between the two, because this is why we need to have your bill. We're going to go to transparency, and eventually I'm going to get to why would you oppose it if it's not doing it? Okay. Now we're going to go to CEPI. CEPI is promoting, they have, if you look at them, they're looking, their 100-day mission, okay, having learned from the dangers of the COVID vaccine, I say that with as sarcastically as I can. That's absolute, it's unbelievable. They want to be able to essentially respond to the next pandemic within 100 days. So new vaccine in 100 days. And presumably this, you know, there's all sorts of discussion going on right now. How does that look? And we've got your WHO treaty that we're talking about, and they're all working on what does this look like. So do we lock down for 100 days and then everybody's mandated to take a vaccine? I don't know. We don't have definitive answers, but this is the kind of stuff that the policymakers are wrestling with on the global level. 100 days. How can you test a vaccine for long-term effects in 100 days? I'm curious. Now, I am not a doctor. If Dr. McCullough was here, I would say, Dr. McCullough, could you explain to me how it is that they're going to do long-term 10-year-out testing in 100 days? And, I'm curious as to what they're going to do with that. Yeah, or faster. Yeah, test it faster. So we also have, and one of the things that I want to bring into this. So we talk about funding mechanisms and studies. Understand that a lot of the studies and a lot of what I dig into is stuff that is not funded by our federal government. So it's not subject to a FOIA. I can't get all the answers. There's a lot of gaps in my knowledge. That's why I really focus on the difference between the scientist and the lawyer. I can present to you what I know, and I can give you a piece of paper to back up everything I'm saying, but I can't go through all the steps that you have to in a science. So what I'm telling you is it looks like a duck and quacks like a duck, and then I say, do you think it's a duck? Vaccine development surveillance, big thing with the Gates Foundation. They're working on a ton of different things. One of the things that they're really focused on is transmissible vaccines. They're funding all sorts of studies and all sorts of programs. Them, the Wellcome Trust, the Rockefeller Foundation, a number of these groups are funding this and supporting this on a massive scale. Oddly, and I'm sure this is a complete coincidence, there are also trillions of dollars being poured into certain vaccine sectors as investment money. I'm not suggesting that perhaps, these guys intend to influence global policy making to ensure that their investments do well, but, you know. But we look at the Gates Foundation, they're pouring a lot of money, and one of their things is transmissible vaccines. How do you get a vaccine into someone in a poor nation? For anybody that's had the opportunity to travel to some of the nations that are less developed and less modernized than America, you'll know that there's a lot of people that still live in this planet that are really not—they're not going to school every day. They're not going to their doctor. They're not getting pressure on the TV or the internet because they don't have a TV or internet. How do you make sure that they're getting their pokes as well? Well, the Gates Foundation is all over that, along with those other institutes. In the
80s, as I mentioned, where I started serving, of course, we expected nuclear, biological, and chemical. We also expected vectors. Well, at least we studied the potential of the Soviets using vectors. A vector is, of course, the fear that the Soviets would introduce an insect that would carry a pathogen. And once again, our assessment from the intel agencies of which I worked was that it was unlikely because it would affect everybody, not just the enemy troops. It's uncontrollable. It's a bit chilling to me that we just haven't learned anything. I mean, yes, the Soviets were going to use persistent, not persistent chemical agents to break through our lines or to paralyze the parts of the lines that they weren't venturing to. Yes, they were going to use tactical nukes to blow a hole in a North German plane and march towards the Rhine. But the idea of bioweapons and vectors back in the 80s was anathema, even to the Soviets. Chris.
Yeah, actually, I was in England in the 1980s when the mad cow disease came, and I can't give blood to this day because of that. Yep. And we knew that the Soviets were there trying to get onto those farms in Western Europe to get samples of that misshapen prion so that they could weaponize it. There were actual reports that they were trying to get to those fields, and the British and German governments were actively securing those things like a crime scene. And yet now we turn around and we're giving this stuff that, and you know, you said about the gaps in the knowledge and compared the lack of information through the Freedom of Information Act and private industry. And the fact that we, again, I go back to us sending this stuff out to a declared enemy of the United States. I mean, the Chinese government has declared that the United States is their enemy. Yep. If somebody like Anthony Fauci and others, they had the ban that was done by under the Obama administration because everybody recognized that this kind of bioweapon was an abomination and that Fauci would turn around and fund that research, sending our tax dollars, as well as some of our initial research, over to an avowed enemy of the United States to develop that weapon and ostensibly the counterweapon. Where in the world is any kind of there's no common sense? Doc, you talked about it. The truth has gone out the window. Deductive and inductive reasoning. But
well, I have some. I'm happy to provide some information on that.
Tom, if I could interrupt, sir, we're 20 minutes over. See if you could wrap up with that. And with that thought, we'd like to know about legal culpability. Who's going to be held accountable for this? You know, Indiana. What's the bottom line, from pharmaceuticals to politicians that played this game? Over to you.
I tell you what. Number one thing I want to get through on this testimony, and I'll be happy to return to that. The food stuff is a possibility. They're looking at alternative mechanisms for getting this into you. The plant-based, the food-based, they're working on it. There's a paper out of China. They talk about that they can inject a cow. You drink the milk, you get the vaccine. This is something that is happening. Ingestible vaccines, they started working on them years and years ago. First paper I could find, clinical trials, was 05 on potatoes with an ingestible potato. You eat the potato, you get the hepatitis B vaccine. The idea that what you'll hear in response, and I want to give you a heads up because you will get a response, oh, we can't do ingestible. Well, I'm looking right now at all sorts of developments in mRNA technology, whether that's mod RNA, mRNA as in messenger RNA, there's a lot of RNA technologies. In fact, I'm looking right now at RNAi technology, which Felicia and I and some others spoke about last night, where they are talking right now. I'm looking at Bayer Monsanto. They coat the seed for some corn with this RNAi technology. And then when a worm eats it, it dies. So that's ingestible, isn't it? I mean, the worm's eating it. And it's not the seed. It's the root. So it grows into the plant. It eats the root. So they coat the seed. It turns to a plant. They eat the root. It dies. Whether they're talking about genetics, this is chemistry, right? The chemicals that go on that seed, whether it's affecting a root worm or whether it's affecting something else, is only a matter of how the chemicals are designed. If they're not going to do it, there is no reason to oppose your transparency bill. If this isn't happening, there's no burden. They want to say there's a burden on the farmers, there's a burden. There's no burden. If you're not screwing with our genes, you don't have to disclose anything. But if you're going to turn your cow or your plant or your horse or whatever it is into a medical device, we have the right to know. And that includes your mosquitoes. That includes anything. If you're going to screw with my genome, it is my right to know. If you're going to screw with anything you've got, if you're going to interfere with my medical, my health care, my anything, I have the right to know. That's the law. That's the law. It should be. And all yours does, it doesn't add any burden to anybody unless they're doing something that's going to screw with you medically. Senator, to answer your question, there's two parts. First of all, mosquitoes. Remember, these are safe and effective vaccines, so they're not spreading a bioweapon. Second of all, think about this. For Ralph Baric to do what he did with a known enemy of the United States through EcoHealth Alliance, that means that they took biotechnology, advanced biotech, advanced enough to modify a virus into something more dangerous, to literally create a bioweapon by legal definition, and transferred it to a lab that was known to be controlled by the CCP, who has said to us, we want to use bioweapons against the U.S. Do you think that he did that without our DOD or CIA knowing that he did that? They absolutely knew that. And you want to know what's not being discussed? Who in our Department of Defense and intelligence community was aware of this, and what were they doing? Dr. Anthony Fauci and the CDC are actively involved by law in bioweapons defense. That's tied in with the DOD. This whole thing is tied in with the DOD, and no one has the courage to talk about that. No one. I can tell you that I will now have, in the next month, more censorship on my websites, more attacks, more DDoS attacks than any 10 people, because I talked about this. Every time I do, that's what happens. But I will tell you that I will not stop talking about this, because you cannot tell me, in no way can you convince me that we transferred advanced biotech to our Chinese enemies without our DOD and CIA's knowledge. I think it was a flubbed intel operation, but I don't have the evidence to back it up yet. Give me time.
I don't think that, I don't know whether it's a flubbed intel op or so, but what I will tell you is you have to throw common sense and any objective reasoning out the window to not see what is going on. And for people in the media and every place else, I'm subject to shadow banning and stuff myself. You have to suspend reality is basically what you have to do. And they want us to not hear it so that people can be indoctrinated hearing the one side that actually creates a social contagion.
By the way, senators, if I may,
yeah.
We presented to Senator Johnson at a roundtable DMED data. Now, that data has been questioned all over the place. Flak checkers said, it's a glitch. Are you aware that we presented data, military data? I can show you the video of us having it taken off the military servers. I have the video. I had two witnesses in the room with the people that were doing it. I got it from multiple military doctors, and I got it under oath, under penalty of perjury. Are you aware that to this day, the Department of Defense has not yet once responded to the accusation that they were knowingly injecting our soldiers with a poison that was resulting in unknown numbers of deaths, injuries, et cetera, under oath? All we got was an innocuous, there was a glitch, to a fact checker. The media did the rest, and there was nothing else about it. Hundreds of thousands demonstrating reproductive, all the things that Dr. McCullough testified to seeing now, we knew. The DMED data showed it. Now, I'm not going to tell you that it was perfect, because I don't know. But what I know as a lawyer is when I make an accusation based on a good faith collection of data, which, by the way, that was submitted in a court case. I can't submit that to a court unless I believe it's done in good faith. And yet, despite that sort of a kind of thing, this same military has not responded to what they're doing to our soldiers, not once, under oath. Don't tell me, don't put out a fact check. I don't care what your spokesman says. I want you to testify under penalty of perjury. You let me cross-examine you. Then we'll talk.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony, Thomas. I appreciate it, brother. I'd like to recognize Representative Wendy Fink online. Thank you for joining us, Representative Fink.